And I accept that that means I'll maybe never win another race again. Like, maybe the toxic, sick person that was able to win this little road, like, maybe I'll never be her. Maybe I'll stay the person that raced around Rwanda, just going like, I'm just here for a good time and I'm going to sleep 6 hours a night. Maybe I'll stay like that, or maybe I'll get my mojo for racing back and I'll be at the pointy end again, but I don't know that for sure. I think, yeah, it's all about that soul searching of like, what do you really love about ultras? Why do you really want to be here? If I want to be doing this 20 years from now, if I want to be a lifelong endurance athlete, then what's the most important thing to me? And like, I don't know. It'll ebb and flow.
Today on the show, we are chatting with a legendary in the sport of ultra racing, somebody that I have looked up to. And honestly, when Mel was like, hey, we should have Jenny Tuff on the show, I was like, oh my God, starstruck, basically.
Yeah.
I love Jenny. She's just got such a good energy about her, and she's so honest and real.
I felt it
was sugarcoating.
No sugarcoating. And I mean, yeah, I mean, you always know that these people are real people, but I felt like a little bit of an imposter DMing her, being like, hey, Jenny, Cynthia and I have this podcast. Will you be on it? And she was so pumped, which felt really cool. And it was so nice to have a very genuine, down-to-earth conversation to actually get to know someone who's, you know, been part of the sport for such a long time, has won events like Silk Road twice. She's won Atlas Mountain Race. She's often been the only woman to finish events, or been the only woman to toe the line, or been part of a very, very small handful. But yeah, it was cool to get to know the person behind the legend, because I think there's a lot of lore built up around people.
Yeah. I think she gives us a lot in this podcast. It was really great to hear from her about some of her experiences in the last few years. I do want to give a warning that we do talk about some disordered eating. And so if that gives you a pause or is a trigger for you, then we'll put in the show notes when we start to talk about that. It's in the second half. And yeah, just come and join us for this conversation with Jenny, where she just kind of opens up a bit and we have fun. We actually talked about how after we should just go and hang out or have a beer or some pizza or something, because that's kind of what it felt like.
It was super great. It was tough to end the call. Sorry. I had to do one pun. If you're listening, Jenny, I know that's your entire life. But anyways.
It's her real name, by the way, everybody.
Real name. Real name.
Jenny Tuff.
Let's
dive in. Good morning, everybody. Actually, good evening for you, Jenny. Jenny Tuff, welcome to the podcast. Welcome
to Detours.
Where are you calling in from?
I am in the Highlands, just in my home. Yeah, Scottish Highlands.
Scottish Highlands. Is it cold there right now?
It is. Gale force winds outside right now.
Oh, no.
Grim. Yeah, it is grim. Yeah, it's a bit of a trainer day, I think.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I'm sure it's beautiful in the summertime, though.
Yeah, it's beautiful year-round. You just have to, like, really love Gore-Tex, and then you're fine. Number one hot tip for Scotland.
But yeah. But you've lived in Squamish, so I understand that, like, you have history with Gore-Tex. You'd have to love Gore-Tex to live in any of those places.
Yeah, I don't... Like, if you ask me what's your nemesis in weather, I would always say rain, but I just end up always either in BC or Scotland or my two homes. And I think I need to just reassess some things about my choices. Those are the passports I have. So that's where I am.
And are you from, I feel like I could probably Google this, but are you from Calgary or just outside of Calgary in Canada?
Yeah. That's where I grew up.
Cool. Have you? Very cool.
Yeah. All the Tour de kids, I guess, will know it.
Yeah. So I did a race out, started in Canmore. And then it was like along the High Rockies Trail down to like Fernie. I've done a ton of bike packing in the Rockies, but I read your book solo, and I knew relatively that you're Canadian, and I thought it was Calgary, but I wasn't 100% sure. So
cool to put all the pieces together.
Where I grew up, I haven't actually been back. It's like since I was a kid.
Since you were a kid, wow. How did you end up in the Highlands from one rainy place to another?
I'm half Scottish, so I had the passport, and I was actually on a bike tour. I left Canada on like a one-way ticket. I wanted to cycle around the Mediterranean, and this was like not a planned thing. And then that was the year the Arab Spring started. This is obviously a long time ago. And so my bike ride got kind of kaput by world events, which I'm sure everyone can relate to right now. There was one way ticket to Edinburgh that I could afford. And so I went to Edinburgh, cycled from the airport to my cousin's house, and just haven't left. That was a good like 12 years ago. And
wow. Oh my God, that's like what I dream of at night, is just buying a one-way ticket to Europe and just not coming back.
It's good. It's a really good vibe when you get on the plane and you're just like, shit, I think I just actually set my life on fire and this is going to be so fun. And then you just have a tent and that's the only thing you own. And like, I mean, I was 22, so it's a different time.
I mean, any age you could do that, but at 22, that's amazing. Yeah. Wow. More power to you.
Yeah. You have that naivety at that time, don't you?
Mm.
And nothing to lose at that time in your life.
The world is your oyster.
It totally is. Yeah. You've got nothing going for you, but also nothing against you. So you're like, nah, let's see if we can cycle to Egypt.
You were 22. That was 12 years ago, you said. So how did you find the bike before that? Like what transpired? Like, how did you get from there to like moving with your tent and bike all the way to Scotland with a one-way ticket?
I was never a cyclist. I mean, I was never an athlete even, but I had gotten to running marathons when I was at uni. And so I was going to spin class to cross train marathons. And they were really fun. And I thought, this is so fun. I bet I could probably do this outside. So when I graduated, I bought a bike with all the money I had and then cycled to the Yukon. And that was really hard because I didn't know how to. It turns out it's not the same as spin class. It's not the same as all.
No.
Like, mechanicals were such a thing. And I didn't have a phone at the time because I was such a little hippie. So I like had handwritten notes in my bag about how to fix things that would go wrong with my bike. Like,
oh my gosh,
what to do.
Incredible.
If I got a puncture. And I would just like, and I cried all the time. Like, I would get a puncture and it would be so hard because I only got a handwritten note to tell me how to get the tube out. And I had like Schwabi marathons on my wheels. So like, it said that I could just get the wheel off, the tire off, but I couldn't get the damn tire off. And I'd just be in tears because I just had this handwritten note that says you should just take it off and couldn't get it off. It was such a disaster. So that's how I found the bike. I just thought it was a good idea at the time. That's all.
Yeah. The mechanical learning curve, I feel like, is one of the hardest parts to feel self-sufficient. Like, getting the courage to go and do it, you'd think that that's maybe the hardest part, but oftentimes, like, because the bike is like a vehicle, there's so many other moving parts. I love the handwritten notes. That's like so just so fit. What if it were they laminated?
No.
I'm like, well, what if it rained? What if it rained? Your notes are disintegrated and poor Jenny's on the side of the road with just like a disintegrated note.
No, just crying the whole time. Just so much crying. But yeah, no.
So much character building.
It was really character building. But yeah, surprised that I recycled again. I think it took me a little while afterwards before, like with my bike just kind of sitting in the corner of my apartment being like, I don't know about you. It's like, I don't know. That kind of hurt. Like, but yeah, then
how long was the trip?
A month.
Okay, that's quite long.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, but I mean, I just didn't know. Like, I never cycled anywhere. So there was this trip that it looked like on Google Maps it's going to be about 2,000-ish kilometers. And I just didn't know. Like, I had never cycled anywhere. So I didn't know what that distance meant or how long it would take.
And it's almost better not to know.
Yeah, it's like that cluelessness.
That's how I feel about racing. I just don't want to know. Just like, it's whatever.
Well, I know when people come to me with their cue sheet saying like what percentage the next climb is, I'm like,
I don't want to know.
Whatever the next climb is, what will be, but like, I don't want to think about it. I, like, you always get asked how much your bike weighs. I'm like, if I knew that number, I'd be angry. It's better
I'd be crying on a climb, being like, you could have left something at home, you idiot. Like,
yeah, Exactly. Whereas
if you don't weigh
it. Do you ever do that thing where you're riding and you're like, I could just leave this here and be okay with not using it again? Like, I don't need this very expensive tent that I brought with me.
I was going to ask for an example. A tent?
Yeah.
Not a tent, but, you know, like.
I think when the weather's like, really good, you're like, I could just yes. get rid of, like, literally half the stuff I have here is to keep me alive in a storm. It's not a storm now. Just yeah.
Get rid of these rain pants and these yeah. booties.
Yeah, exactly. When it's really hot out, it just feels so stupid.
Yeah, but then, you know, you're at the top of a mountain pass and you got to put every single everything thing you on. Own on. And
you're still
like,
freezing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, I'm really glad that I didn't make a rash decision to get rid of all my belongings.
Yeah, totally.
It's tempting. So from that trip to the Yukon, just like with a little bit of internet sleuthing, your first ultra was a Trans Scotland in 2017, which is a 630K race that I believe is a road race. And I was reading your Substack. It said you did it in one push. Like, what was that experience like compared to going from touring, I presume, before that to the first kind of big effort on the bike and how you approach that mentally, physically, all the things?
Yeah, it was a shock. But it was something I really wanted to experience. I wanted to know what it would feel like. And I did have all my sleeping kit with me because I didn't think I would do it in one push. It wasn't like I went out with this intention. I just went out with curiosity. Like, what would an ultra be like? Can I do it? Can I keep up with all these? I was so intimidated by other cyclists. And I still am to a large degree. So yeah, I was there with all these Lycra guys at the start line. I was like, whoa, do I really belong here? Can I do this? And then, yeah, just kind of went with it and just kind of moment by moment. And then, you know, when you get through the night and you didn't mean to, and then the sun comes up and you're like, well, I'm not going to sleep now, am I? I have to see this through. So then I think I had a really, really hard and miserable day where I felt like crap because I'd cycled all night and I just stopped in lots of cafes until eventually I was at Glasgow in the finish line. I was like, holy shit, I just stayed awake for that long and I just rode my bike that far and I'd never done it before. And I was just so chuffed. I couldn't believe that I could do that. Like, it was a really, really empowering moment.
Yeah, I think we can both relate to that feeling of just like when you don't know necessarily if you can do it. I mean, you believe, but you don't know. And I think those are two they're very important like distinction between the things. This is just a selfish question, but were you ever afraid of riding at night? And like, is that something you enjoy now or you're still kind of like, oh, the night riding?
I love it now. But yeah, it was my biggest problem. I had done a one night ride before that and it was just on my own. I decided to do a trail here called the West Highland Way, which you can kind of mountain bike in 24 hours. So I decided to do that my first time really going through the night and I was really alone and I stayed on the phone with my boyfriend at the time. Like, pretty much until my phone battery ran out, which is a stupid idea, but like, I was so scared. I just couldn't cope with it. And I had so many lights on both my body and the bike. I hated it. So it was something I really worked on. And obviously living in either Scotland or Canada, if you're not into night riding, that's half the season out for you. So, you know, so I've come around to it and now I find night riding really, really peaceful. I mostly run at night because then it's just so zen. Go out with absolutely nothing at the night. And yes, I really, really, really love it now. And I'm really comfortable with it in races. And I'll spend quite a lot of time night riding because I think I can cover more ground because I'm not as distracted. But yeah, the first few times not so good. And still on roads. I don't like it on roads.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. It's definitely an uneasy feeling because even if you have all of the lights, like you said, on your body and your bike and reflective material, you never know if someone is distracted or, you know, drunk or something like that while riding. So definitely a little bit scary on the road. But I hear you on the riding at night at first. I was so scared. Not really? Even scared. I just was so unhappy about it at first. Like it just gave me this like feeling of weirdness being in the dark and being alone at night. But then one day I guess if you do something enough, it becomes more normal. And then, yeah, you're just in Morocco or, you know, in riding the Silk Road route in the nighttime and you're like, actually, this is much better because I'm not distracted.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I find it very peaceful at night.
then yeah. you miss things. It's so like, yeah, that's the constant hard battle is like, you know, wanting to see things, but also wanting to pursue performance and juggling those two things. And then eventually, like, I guess it really just depends on what your goals are for that given event.
Yeah, it makes it hard for destination races, I think, because you really have to decide, like, I flew all the way here. Is like, what is worth it for me this time? Like, is it that I need to engage this country? In which case, like, is this throwing some of that away? But then also, like, you know, there are things you see at night that are really special, you know, like you guys, the stars in Morocco, how good.
They're nuts. They're
how
like
good.
Life-changing. So amazing.
Yeah. You never knew it could be that good.
Never knew. And I mean, I always like Cynthia likes to ride it in the forest because she feels hugged, which, you know, I like the forest during the day. But at nighttime, I'm like, oh, there could be a grizzly bear. There could be da 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 da. There's apex predators where I live. Like, I might die. Which is
I think my brain
really
was a little bit like Brothers Grimm in a forest at night. I'm like, ooh, that trail looks definitely where the killer lives.
Yeah, exactly. But in Morocco, there's no, I mean, I'm sure there's some predators, but there's nothing. So you're just like, you know, rocks and sky and stars. And it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it is so nice. Yeah, really, really special nights out there. They're worth
the
it.
Sunrises too. Ugh.
And yeah. did you do the first Atlas, correct?
Yeah.
And yeah. you did the first Silk Road.
Yeah.
How the heck did you get to those, like, those races? Like, obviously Silk Road was the first one that happened of Nelson's events, but, like, how did you hear about it? Was that your first off-road race, or how did that come
yeah,
about?
Yeah, I didn't even own a mountain bike at the time. To say I wasn't a good mountain biker. I didn't mountain bike at all. I wouldn't have had the audacity to sign up except that it was in Kyrgyzstan, and I'd run across Kyrgyzstan I think a year previously. So it was a really special place to me. And I felt like I knew the country well. And I think with races like that, cycling is one of many things you have to be good at. So 100%. I think I told myself, okay, I'll be a garbage cyclist. Like, it'll just be really sad. I'm going to have to walk over every bump. But like, I can survive. I can handle the country. I know the altitude, the wilderness. Like, so, and it just, I had too much FOMO, basically. I knew some friends that were going, and I was like, you're going to Kyrgyzstan? Can I come? And so, yes, I begged Nelson to let me in, despite me not having, you know, enough to my name to say that I was a responsible entry. But yeah, no, and then, yeah, it was amazing. And the fact that I could survive Kyrgyzstan that year definitely was what kind of made it. Because, yeah, like, I brought a gravel bike, and it took me... That was the first time I ever cycled my bike across a river. True story. Oh. I never knew bikes could go through water. That's how bad of a cyclist I was before. Oh, and then, God. Like, eventually I was like, man, this is really time consuming. I'm going to unclip every time there's a little stream crossing the path. And I saw another cyclist go through it. I was like, oh, my God, I didn't know that. That's how bad of a cyclist I was, you guys. Really not a mountain biker. But, yeah, throughout that race,
bad.
I figured it out.
That's just, like, not knowing, you know, you just didn't know what was possible.
No, I had no idea. But I'm so good on a gravel bike now. I mean, that's enough experience. If you get around Silk Road course on drop bars,
oh my
you'll
God,
always
impressive.
Be good on drop bars after that.
Would you go back and do it again on a gravel bike?
So I did it last time I did on a hardtail, and I was like, oh, this is quite fun.
Yeah.
But there's, I mean, fun. Yeah, I think between the two of them, having finished the race both on, like, on each one on a gravel and mountain bike, I wouldn't say for sure which one is actually better, because the gravel bike does come into its own in so many places. And like I said, now I'm so comfortable on a gravel bike. I love underbiking. I think it's silly and fun. And I did the Atlas on a gravel bike as well. So I don't learn.
You did Atlas on a gravel bike? I don't think I realized that.
Yes. Again, I mean, this awesome. Is a Nelson thing on his first year races when, like, there's nothing, there's no beta from the other kids.
Oh, it
to
was
tell
the first
you.
Year. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've only got what Nelson
Everyone
says.
Was on a gravel
and
bike.
He always says a gravel bike will be very suitable for this race. That's what it said on the website for both of those. I signed up. So
does
like,
he say
good,
that for
a
Hellenic? Did he say that for Hellenic? Or did he say mountain bike?
Hellenic, he did not. I mean, I think the manuals now are more sensible. It does say, like, a hardtail mountain bike is more suitable. I think he did say for Hellenic, he's like, you could get around on a gravel bike. You'd probably have more fun on a hardtail.
Oh, yeah. I think that's right. I think now, yeah, he's always switched his tone on, like, you should probably bring 29ers, whatever you ride.
Yeah. Like, he gives us a minimum kind of tire width. He's like, I mean, if you want to do it on whatever you want to do, do it on whatever you want to do. Just yeah. know that you might not enjoy yourself and you might hate me significantly more.
Yeah. And like, you know what? It's all personal choice as well. Mm-hmm. Like the year that I did Atlas on a gravel bike, like Marcus Stitz finished it on a single speed. Like he finished it on a single speed. He actually within the cutoff time.
And that's so impressive.
You know, like, oh yeah, exactly. And then you guys know Shona and Rich show up in tandem.
Did it on tandem.
Yeah, hey, exactly. So I think it's personal choice. And this is, yeah, I think something that before the race, I don't like to engage too much. I don't know what your girls' yeah. experience has been with the start line and the like, what gear ratio do you have and what tire pressure are you running? And I feel like you only get asked that to be told that you're wrong.
Yes. Well, people just want to feel reassured in their choices. And yeah. so they like, they ask you so they can share about theirs. And like, there are some things that like far away from the event, I like talking about being like, oh, are you going to bring this? What do you like? How yeah. is this totally necessary? Or am I just being a bit overkill? But yeah, I would agree. I try not to engage in any of the gear chat when you're already there and you've done everything that you can because your choices are made. You have dug your grave or you've, you know, created a beautiful situation for yourself. But either way, like, it's done.
Yeah. And it's also like, you don't know me. Like, you know, like, yeah, like Marcus riding on a single speed is an amazing example because who would have said that was an okay idea for any of Nelson's races? But it's like, well, you don't know him. You don't know, like, how much grit that man had that he pulled it off. And like, yeah, same with my gravel bike. I'm like, you don't know how much I love riding a gravel bike. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it is stupid, but it's my stupid. And
it's my
grown-ass woman. And it's exactly. You're like, you are a grown-up. You can make your choices. And you know what? You may love it. And it's totally possible to do it. Yeah. I don't know though.
We were just having a conversation a couple days ago with Meg, who is the disorganizer, as we call it, of the Stagecoach 400. And she mentioned that someone reached out to her and asked if they could do the route. This is like a mountain bike, preferred bike kind of route. You could do it on a gravel bike, but more fun on a mountain bike. And somebody asked if they could use a townie. Which is like a flat bar commuter, not even a commuter. It's a cruiser with like a step through situation. Yes, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
And asked if they could use it for this route. And I think she gently said, not a good idea.
Yeah.
So a little guidance here and there is good.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to get silly about it, then we'll have to step in.
Can you imagine doing Silk Road with an Amsterdam townie bike?
Honestly, when Alan said he was going to go on a cargo bike, I mean, there were so many. Oh my God, I would just spend so much time going through my mind the hikes. Like I would think about like specific passes and how long I had to carry my bike on my back, you know, not be able to push it where I had to actually pick it up. And I would just sit there and go like, well, I guess Alan's a boy and he's 6'1" and maybe things just get a bit easier when you're bigger than, I don't know, but. Yeah, there were so many specific moments I just thought back to. I was like, oh, I don't like it. I just can't. Like, I have my limits of how much I can be patient with my own equipment before I'm like, it's your fault.
Truth.
It's your fault. This is hard. Yeah, I don't. A townie, no. I don't think I could ride to the shop on a townie. I mean, I live out in the boonies. Like, just to be clear, the shop is like 12 kilometers away, but like, I still don't think I would do it.
Wouldn't be as fun.
I love my little
carbon. When your bike is comfortable and you know it really well. And
I know we're spoiled when it's light and snappy and it feels good. Before you ask your question, Cynthia, selfishly, I want to know, Jenny, what your favorite pass in Kyrgyzstan is and what your like arch nemesis pass in Kyrgyzstan is.
I think both times I'm going to answer Tosser pass. I think I've got to do it both times. I did the Silk Road and they were both really special moments, both in the placement of the race that it's like a really crux move that, you know, when you've got over it, you've cleared some of the hardest bits of the course. But then I've always had a shit time. Like the first time I did it, there was a huge snowstorm. So I went up in the snow and then I had to descend. Like that's a good long descent. Again, the not a mountain biker year for me. That there was enough of a gap between me and the guy in front of me that his tracks were now covered. And so I just couldn't see where the road went. There's lots of holes that you can fall into. And then of all things, when I was like, okay, this is really maybe too dangerous. Maybe I should just walk it. Then the media crew showed up with a drone. So I was like, okay, if there's ever a moment to style it out, you got to style it out. It was like famously the film that they made that not a single girl had a show in. So whenever I saw them in your car, I was trying really hard to be like, you're the only girl on the course. You better make it look good. Yeah. And then the next year, I think I did it in the middle of the night. And then I had the sunrise. And then I had a huge mechanical at the top. And I had to fix it. And it was like minus 10. And I couldn't use my tools. And so I've just always had such a time. But then it's always been the most beautiful place. So yeah, Leinstasser, what's your vote? What would you pick?
Oh, I mean, I haven't made it far enough round yet. But I'm most looking forward to... Yeah, I know. I say yet because, like, it'll happen. And I'm not really... This is... we don't have to spend too long on this, but like, I think finish lines are bonuses. They're the best bonus you could possibly get out of an event, but like, they're never guaranteed. So
if it's everything to you, then you've already shot your experience in the foot. Like, yeah, you got to have another reason to go there because, you know, Silk Road is still almost 50% of finishers, isn't it? So like,
yeah, it's still
if that's what you need out of the experience, then...
I'm excited for Kelsu. I'm really excited for Kelsu because that was not in the route the year I went. So Jake didn't experience it. So that will be brand new for him. And he also did Silk Road on a gravel bike. He did on his Salsa Warbird and his brakes completely failed at the second checkpoint.
Both brakes?
His rear brake went first and then his front brake failed at CP3.
He was using his heel
to stop down Shamsi. And he made it. He did it. But
I don't like it at all.
we're getting brake bleeds for sure before we go to cruise.
Yeah, that race. Like, there's so many mechanical dropouts that you just look at the guy and you're like, there's nothing you could have done. You know, like there are just serious failures of the bike that you're like, it's just bad luck.
Bad luck and seriously, like, rough terrain and high altitude and just, like, all of the extremes that just unravel bodies and bikes. It's
so
pretty
Kelsey is your one?
I'm looking forward to that, I think. I don't know. I'm just trying to get as fast as possible to have a buffer against whatever shenanigans happens. Because, like, yeah. I'm totally fine with stopping for a day to fix whatever happens. I mean, I'd like a buffer of like 2 days, you know, but and then if nothing bad happens, then we're just going fast, which is great.
Yeah, we got extra time for swimming in the lake.
Swimming in the lake. Yeah, it's technically our honeymoon, which I know you told me is a trash honeymoon.
It is. Really is. I can't, like, there's not even, I just, whatever. Just what could be more romantic than having diarrhea together at the same time, I guess.
Yeah. You put the... I'll just leave
nailed
that
it in the head.
If you can make it through this, you can make it through your match.
Yeah, exactly. That is so good. That's so good.
Too funny.
I know Cynthia was going to ask this, but you and Alan are... Is it next weekend that Grand Guanche starts?
Yeah, I'm going to ride as a pair with Mr. Alan Shaw, who is a killer climber. So I was really intimidated by that. I think I really got in my head. Like, I'm just such a girl when it comes to riding with other people. I'm like, oh, sorry, I'm going to slow down. I feel really bad. And then, I think a lot of the reason why we're doing this one is we've had a lot of chats about how there's too much, like, alpha culture coming into bikepacking. And, you know, both of us have been around this seeing them for a little while. We're like, when did this happen? Like, when did people start wearing like matching pro kit? Like, when did that come in here? Like, it used to be there was always someone in denim cutoffs. Like, you know, like, we used to be cool. So I think we started talking
we
about like
cool.
Yeah, we're like, let's just be cool. Like, let's go, like, we'll definitely ride at a level that is fun for us, but we're also like, you know, we're debating our music choices. Like, should we take earbuds 100%. That we can stay within Bluetooth range of each other, should we carry a speaker and just piss off everyone?
The speaker.
Do the speaker.
Yeah,
do
the speaker.
Do
the speaker.
For sure. Yes.
Yeah.
That was actually going to be my question. Who is the DJ? Who is going to be
Alan.
The DJ?
Like,
always Alan.
Like, gay guy that actually parties and me that lives like quiet life in the Highlands. It's obviously going to be Alan. Like, Yeah.
I don't know, though. You probably have, like, some secret DJ talent in there, like, we don't know about. But
it's 90s
That
pops,
should be really
Cynthia.
Fun. 90s
pops.
Okay, okay.
90s
it's,
all right.
Yeah, no one's, hey. No one's requesting me back as their teacher.
We've all heard it, but we still love it.
Yeah. Never get teachers at night. That's what my music taste is.
Yeah, I did Grand Guanche last year for the gravel. And, I mean, have you done the road version before?
No,
oh, so you haven't
done
any of them? Oh, oh my God.
You made the
Autos,
didn't you?
I did not. I got to go back. I was close. I didn't make the last island by like 25 minutes, or the last ferry.
Yeah, there's like one ferry a day.
Yeah, that's and I had to wait for 24 and a half hours. On that
this
island.
Literally, the thing I'm most worried about is that I'll be watching a ferry going out to sea. Like, if I miss a ferry by 1 hour, then you're like, okay, you were never going to make it. But if you watch one leaving the port.
It was hard. And this was the one that I missed was the last one before El Hierro. And it's basically a descent. And it's like a pretty techie descent. So you're climbing forever. And then you go through like a deserty area and it's hot as crap, and then you go downhill, and it was like in that hot deserty area where I realized I could probably almost kill myself on the descent and maybe make it
and then
I just at that point was so cracked I stopped on the side of the road with the person I was riding with, and we just sat there. I basically like almost cried because I was like, I'm not gonna make it. But then I got to spend 24 hours on a nice island.
Yeah,
I sat by the beach. Yeah, basically the like, okay, in America our like continental breakfast is terrible. It's like the worst food ever. Like you don't want to eat it basically. But I stayed at like a, you know, subpar hotel that was not super expensive, and the breakfast, I sat there for like 3 hours because I had all of this time. I ate so much food. I actually remember going it down. All I had was cycling shoes. So I didn't wear my shoes. Like I wore socks there's like 100 people in the breakfast room. Yeah, but they wouldn't let me in. So then I had to go trudge back upstairs.
Oh, snow.
And then
I'm
go
like,
get my
they
cycling
let you
shoes.
That's so snobby.
So it was an adventure for sure. I love Grand Guanche though. I want to do the mountain bike version at some point.
Yeah, me too. Especially because like it's in December, isn't it? Which is,
it's like a good time. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah,
you know, like I want to do something.
Cycling here
winter.
Is definitely horrible. Let's go to a nice Spanish island.
Yeah.
What's your top tip for Grand Guanche?
Alan texted me this morning and was like, hey, can you give me some tips?
Okay.
I was like, yeah, I'll write you some things.
Work.
And I would say my top tips are, I don't know, like, look around. It's so beautiful there. And everything is actually pretty affordable because it's like a holiday town for people from Spain. So it's not super expensive like some other places, which is quite nice. I would say that there's plenty of places to sleep. The only thing is the ferries are kind of expensive. I think it's like $300 or $400.
Oh my gosh.
So like 300 Wait, euros or 275
per
euros.
Per ferry?
No, like total.
Okay. But
when
it's
I
expensive.
The world, cyclists get to go on all transport for free. Like, come on.
It's just like crazy. I can't believe like that it's so expensive. And it's hilarious when you go on the ferries. Like if you're racing, you really have to like tactically think about how you're going to do it.
You got
because
2 hours
your bike gets
and your bikes get
stacked. So like if you're the first on the ferry, it sounds like, oh great, first on the ferry, but then your bike is the last to be uncovered. So I was actually competing against
on the ramp on the on.
Yes. Okay. So Virginia Cancellari and I were like duking it out. It was actually
hilarious.
Really exciting. We were having a lot of fun racing, and she was super smart on the last El Hierro ferry because I was ahead of her. If I had made the ferry, things would have been different. But basically, everything reset. So we're competing against each other on the last island, which is not that long. Like I think the riding is like 8 hours or something, and you're in the dark because you arrive at 5 p.m. or 6 p.m. or something. And she was so smart. She had her bike. She went on last, and I wasn't even thinking about it. I'm just like socializing because it had been 24 hours since I had ridden, and whatever. And you know, everyone is freaking out because like, once the ferry unloads or like docks, you know, some people love their bikes immediately and everyone else is like trying to squeeze out and push each other around and like move bikes because some people aren't at their bike yet. It's just a hot mess. So I would just say literally on that last ferry from El Euro or from Fuerteventura, I think.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember what the last
one. I don't know. It's all mixed up for me. Gran Canaria?
Lanzarote, maybe? Gran Canaria? Yeah. No.
Let's just say all the names anyway. And one of the next ones.
the last ferry, be the last person on the – that's my suggestion. So
that's
anybody listening,
really good tip,
you know,
actually.
Yeah. It's a hot mess express, like when you get on those ferries.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to stop to tie my shoelace while we're getting on the ferry.
Yes. Yeah.
Guys, I'll catch it.
Oh, I forgot something.
Yeah. Whoops.
But I would say it's also in terms of ferries, like that's a whole thing too, because sometimes the ferry tickets sell out. It's so weird. Each ferry, there are two companies that do ferries. And so you can get there and try and get a ticket. But if they're all booked, then sometimes they say there's no room for a cyclist on there.
No,
that's insane. Yeah,
it's weird. No. But in those locations, there's usually another ferry time close by.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I'm stressed for you, Jenny.
Yeah, this doesn't sound stressful. Yeah.
I don't mean to add stress. It's really fun. I mean, I love that race.
It's a funny stress. One of the first races I did was Transatlantic Way in Ireland, and there's like just this crux ferry that just like, it stops overnight and it changes the entire race because there's that many people that get caught for that 8 hours. And
that's so exciting.
Yeah.
Across Andes was like that this last year, actually.
Really?
Same thing. Yeah. There was like a ferry that basically to just get to the checkpoint. There was like a lollipop and then you came back. So you had literally to sprint from if you get that ferry and try and get back to get to the next ferry. It's like a full-on sprint. Like you can't, like you have to just ride slow until you get to that point so that when you actually take the ferry, you're able to ride above your, like almost at your threshold for however much time, you know, like it is, yeah, it's a whole thing. So
I love it when there's a silly strategy involved because otherwise endurance riding can, I think you have to work so hard to make it not boring because you're just stuck in the same position for so long. So I love it when there's like, there's just little things in between, like the opening times of shops. It's like, you know, what you live and die by.
A huge one is knowing like when something is going to be open and
because you just start forgetting. Like you get to towns at like 3 a.m. and you're like, unbelievable. It's closed. Unbelievable.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you just don't know that's not normal anymore. You're like, it's breakfast time. I know it's breakfast time. 3 o'clock.
You're like, I've arrived. Why aren't you rolling up the carpet and opening up the shops?
Exactly. Like, why?
And like oftentimes, like, I mean, Kyrgyzstan and Morocco, the shop hours are often not like publicly
available.
No, you
can't look them up.
It's just, you kind of just are at the mercy of if you see a person who lives there and you're like, hey.
Yeah, if you're able to get
or they randomly close, like in the middle of the day. Like this last year at Atlas, I was descending one of the climbs and basically there was a shop that was listed as off route and I went to it and I got food. I sat down. I actually took a nap outside. There was like a bunch of cats and people and when I woke up 5-10 minutes later, they were like starting to get ready to leave. They closed the shop door and they all left. And within like a minute of that time, the men's pair came to the shop that was winning. It was Federico and Manuel from Enough Cycling, you know, and they were dying. They come, you know, you can just see that face of somebody that's sunburned and their mouth is like dry and they're just like, they need water so bad. And they were like, what's going on? Where's the shop? And I was like,
oh my God,
they just closed. I just woke up from a nap. I don't really know. And they're like banging on the door because it had been like no time at all. Like it had been like a minute or two. So they ended up opening up the shop door again.
It wasn't an actual shop
that you could walk in. It was like one where there was just like at chest height and they opened it up and they would like go and pick what you wanted for you.
Yeah. That was always fun when you don't speak the language.
Yes,
you're like, bring anything from that shelf. Like, I'm not fussy anymore. I don't even care. Just bring something from that shelf. And that's
I know. I was actually happy that I was there for them because if I hadn't taken a nap, I would have left. So it worked out that I was like, they were just there. I swear. There were cats and everything.
I love that the cats are the marquee of the show.
Yeah.
There were so many kittens outside, but none of them came over to say hi to me. I was really sad about it.
I'm sad for you about that.
Thank you for your concern.
How was your jersey? Like, what was the state of you with that?
Do you think it was maybe your fault? Oh, maybe it was my fault.
Cats were like, we have standards, lady.
We have.
I say it from experience. It's all from love.
Yes, you know. Yeah,
you get
when the cat's
so
like,
gnarly. You get so gnarly.
It's bad when you start to when smell yourself. Yeah. You know that it's really bad.
I had it with my feet in a race a couple weeks ago. I was getting into my sleeping bag. I was like, what's wrong with my sleeping bag? And it was really hard. It was hard to sleep because I was it was in the Arctic, so I was using foot warmers all day long, like those little chemical heat pads. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a smell my feet have ever made before, so I wasn't sure like what was happening. That's not something that's ever come out of my own shoes. So I'm talking about the chemical heat pads, but it like made it hard to sleep. And I was like, okay, this is a problem when like you can't even be with yourself because you're so gross.
Yeah, that's
yikes.
That is so grim. I want to hear more about the fat biking. This is such a hard pivot, but I'd see the little laptop lady in your Instagram bio at Sidetracked Magazine, and I know you do some work for them, but couldn't figure it out. I mean, I assume you write things, but can you tell us more about like Sidetracked, what your role is there, and like how does that fit into your athletic pursuits and like all the adventuring you're doing?
So I'm a producer there, which is just a loose term for I do whatever we do. It's a small publishing company. I started doing some ghostwriting for them, you know, we get submissions from adventurers from all around the world. A lot of them, English will not be their first language, or writing just won't be their preferred mode of storytelling, whereas I am a writer. That's what I like to do. I think at the time when that work came up, my life felt very much like the Jenny Tufts show. Like, you know, when you are, you know, you're competing and you're adventuring and you're also trying to get sponsorship and you're on social media, you end up talking about yourself all day long, and your like, you know, whether or not you can pay your rent is how many times your name gets used and stuff. And it just gets really icky. I'm an introvert. I don't like it. Not good at it. This work came up to be a ghostwriter that I got to then just kind of go into the brains of other adventurers and speak to them for hours on the phone and then get to write their stories for them. And that was just from a mental health standpoint more than paid work, which is also amazing. It was just really refreshing. So I'm on the team officially a day a week. It's a small team. So they're quite a lot. I do their events and all the public stuff. And it's been really fun. We do cover all forms of adventure all around the world. And we do get a lot of really cool submissions and cool people to work with. So it is a bit of relief from the Jenny Tufts show. It just isn't always my favorite place to work.
Well, yeah, because you also have to exist as that human, right? Like, not just promoting yourself, but also, like, then just be a person who's living their life. And it can be very challenging to kind of separate those two things because they, of course, overlap and lines get really blurry. And then it's just like, hey, I just want to be a person.
Yeah, like, you don't know when you're at work and when you're at play. Like, yeah, it all gets, I wonder if you guys find that with your bike as well. You're like, you know, when you're a sponsored athlete, but also you did want to go for a bike ride today. And like, which one is that?
Yeah, you feel like you're always on the clock almost. Like, yeah, there's something you should always be doing. I think that I struggle with that right now I'm starting to get into what you've done for some time. And I find there's always an email I could reply to, or there's always something I could edit, or there's always a post I should be putting up. And it's just like, it's a challenge for sure. And finding time. I have been able to decide that my weekends are actually my weekends.
That's
recently.
Good. That's nice.
Like,
that's big.
I think on Sunday nights occasionally I'll get on, but yeah, I like basically Friday at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock or whenever it is that I kind of feel like I can finish up, I'm able to just say, okay, this is my weekend. And if something comes up that's important, I will address it. But yeah, that's been really good for me. I wonder for you, Jenny, how are you doing Substack? You said just not subside, sidetracked once a week, and then like leaks over a little bit into your other days. How are you incorporating your athletic pursuits, whether that's riding or actually like planning for races and, you know,
or running?
What does that
too.
Look like? Or running. Yeah. I mean, you're also, I mean, for the listeners who might not know, you are also an ultra runner, which is, I mean, yeah. amazing. That is like beyond impressive to me with like running for a long period of time. I don't know how people do it. So that's
yeah,
impressive.
Thanks.
But like,
no,
how do you make
you.
All of that work? I know that's kind of like a broad question.
Yeah.
But...
I think I'm really good at prioritizing myself. You know, I've
good.
Been that's independent for a really long time. And that's kind of the life that I very much carved out for myself. I think women are always made to feel selfish for saying things like that. But fuck it. I don't like.
I love it. Fully support it.
And I made a living off of it in the end. So I'm going to keep doing it. So I'm really good at saying these are my priorities today. And then just kind of making it work around that. And luckily, you know, like we said, that blend between your work and your play where you don't know which one's which, that does actually really help with the time management. But, you know, an event that maybe I have to make an appearance of is also a really big ride. And then, you know, that ends up being a training. So, yeah, I think just I'm quite unapologetic about my boundaries and my time schedule and the things that I need to make happen and the trips that I want to go on and making sure that they're a priority.
That's amazing. I need to get on that level.
You will.
I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle. I mean, I don't follow the, like, I just work whenever I feel the drive to work. If there's something that I'm like, I really don't want to be doing it and I could be taking care of myself, I'll do that.
Totally. Yeah.
But I think that's more like an ADHD thing than a, like, setting boundaries thing. It's like, if I feel like I'm focused, I just got to roll with it. And
totally.
I think that's being a creative as well.
Like, yeah, I was just going to say the same thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If it's creative work and your brain's not in it, you're like, well,
I'm
just staring at my laptop at this point. Like, no one's getting anything out of this. So, yeah, I'm a real diva because, like, yeah, being a writer, I'm like, I'm not in the flow. There's no point to being here today. I better go get my flow and then just go outside and do something else. And then, when the flow is there, then I'm amazing, super productive. I get tons done, but then there might be 3 days in between.
You're not one of those writers who like has the hard and fast rule of like, I must sit at my desk and get so like, cause some people really believe in the like sit and just write garbage for half an hour and that's their creative process. But I know that doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I do a bit of that, like the morning pages thing that you just get up and you force yourself to get in the habit of writing. And sometimes it's just so bad that you just get discouraged and walk away from your desk. So you're just like, wow, I said I was going to write garbage, but then I actually did. And it's kind of discouraging.
Yes,
I do a bit of that, and like I journal and all that. So I do have writing just kind of in my daily practice, but I'm not that militaristic about things. And same with training and like getting out. Like even if I call it training, then it ruins cycling for me really quickly. Like it just has to all be very intuitive, very with the flow, very with my energy. I'm a little hippie, so that's what works for me.
Molly Weaver called it preparation. When she was getting ready for a race, she's like, I don't like to say I'm training. I'm preparing. I'm getting like things in order.
That's cute. I like that.
Yeah, it's a little less pressure. So I take it like you train as you choose and you do what feels right for you at that time. And has it always been that way? Or
I've tried so many types of training plans and like every app that you can sign up for that will turn red when you didn't do a good enough job. Like I've done them all and they never work. I never see it through. And it was actually... I think I've always found that it works when I kind of know what I need for myself. Like I won't push myself. I like doing really big days. It's not like I lack motivation. Like I can trust myself that I will get enough preparation done. But the rigid schedule of a training plan just always, I'll just always get a bit icky and kick off on it. And then I'll miss a day for whatever life reasons and feel like an utter failure because your app's turned red and told you that you are an utter failure. And then I heard Courtney Dalter, I don't know how much running you two do, but you're like,
I love Courtney.
Yeah,
oh my
she's
God.
Amazing.
I would love to meet her.
Oh, I know. Like, actually, there aren't too many elite athletes I worship, but she is probably the top of the pile. And I remember her saying that she does intuitive training where she just wakes up every morning and is like, what am I going to do today? And I think I'd already been doing that. But then the endorsement of hearing someone on that level say that she trained that way,
totally.
I was like, boom, that's from now on. That's what I'm telling people I do. And that's what, like, I'm going to delete Training Peaks. Fuck it. Like, I don't need anything turning red anymore. I'm just going to trust myself. And I do the same amount of work as I ever did before. Like, it's not changed anything. I just don't feel guilty all the time anymore.
So cool.
That's hard when you, Mel and I actually have these conversations occasionally where we talk about, like, if you are, you work from home, you're your own boss, essentially, that making the time to go out and ride sometimes is the hardest, and deciding that it's okay. You know, you almost, like you mentioned, have to set a boundary where, like, okay, actually work, I'm giving you a boundary. I need to go outside and, you know, fill myself so that I can come back and do the work better. And I find, like, that is a challenge. With me, I follow a training plan. I work with a coach, but I decide what time of day I ride. And now that it's getting warmer and there's more sun here, like, I find myself pushing the ride till the end of the day when I should really just get up and do the ride, because then it would be way more productive. Yeah. But, like, you know, that is sort of like goes in with the intuitive feeling of, like, you know, what's going to be the best for your day and how it's going to make you feel. And, you know, if you don't do it, you know, because X, Y, and Z takes over, are you going to feel guilty about it? And I'm definitely that red guilt for sure. I feel that way too. It's a challenge for me. Like, oh, I didn't get to this ride. Actually, like, kind of almost the opposite though, whereas, like, if I don't have somebody keeping me accountable, I won't actually go out. Okay, that's my only problem. It's like, if I don't have, like, something that's like, you should ride today, then a lot of times I would just work until 7 p.m. and I'd be like, ah, oh, it's too late to ride now. So
Jenny's
I have
that's
this.
Not me.
I know.
I'm
I have such
this, a like, bitch if I don't go outside.
I am too. I am also. And that's the problem. It's like, I need to go outside. So I'm not that way.
Better for
but
the world
I just
if you do make it happen.
Sit there. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. I totally feel that.
I'm such a bitch when I don't go outside though.
How'd you learn that permission? Like, was there a turning point? Was there a moment? Or is it just, you know, been cumulative years of, I think you said, like, just being so independent for so long that has really helped you create those boundaries and, like, unlock those different ways of being?
Yeah, I think it's, accumulated over time and maybe, like, longer ago in history of having, like, more controlling or pressuring people in my life, like exes and parents and stuff like that, that when I kind of coming up to being 30 years old, finally figuring out my own independence was mine to have and being able to, put my foot down and say, like, well, it's important to me. And that's actually the only person I need to check in with. And I think it took me a long time to really figure that stuff out. And then, look, also, this stuff is just a silly hobby for us. And it's not a silly hobby for anyone, even someone that has a full-time job and isn't a sponsored cyclist. It's not silly. Like, it's important to us. And yeah,
super
like,
important.
You know, Cynthia, it's your job. Like, you can't skip on it, because even if you aren't specifically paid to go for that ride today, you are, you know, you are expected to ride those bikes behind you. So, yeah, like, it is your job. And yeah, it's just not that I think that women are frequently made to feel like it's their hobby and therefore it's not important and it comes last. And I kind of bought into the whole, like, if you do this on purpose, you're an athlete. It doesn't matter what level of athlete you are. It doesn't matter if you're spending all your money on it rather than the other way around. Like, it's important. You're an athlete. It is important to you. Like, that's it. That's all you need to know. You don't have to ask anyone else for permission. And it's okay to make those boundaries. I say that as a child-free, independent female. Like, I know that I can check my privilege when I say that. But yeah, I think that was kind of my realization is, well, it's really important. I don't care if anyone thinks it's silly that I demand to be free between 10 and 12 every day because I'm going to go out. Like, it's my life.
Yeah. I love that you said that it doesn't matter, you know, whether you're paid or you're paying all your own money to do these sports. Like, if it's important to you and you deem yourself an athlete, then, like, go and do it. And, like, you get to choose versus having that external validation of someone telling you that it's okay. Like, you have the permission to choose that.
I was going to say, it's just a chip on my shoulder of never feeling like an athlete and always feeling really silly if I use that word. Because, like, you know, I'm not on a national team and I don't look like one. And I, like, you know, all these chips on my shoulders that I have about that word, that then I just always felt silly. I always just felt like I didn't have that permission to make it a priority because people would be like, it's not that important, love. Like, you came 30th. Like, you're not that, you know, you're not that important. Like, well, it matters to me.
I have conversations occasionally with people like on the internet, you know, like anytime someone sends me an Instagram message, I will reply. I may not reply immediately, but I'll reply. And recently I had a conversation with somebody who was a cyclist, but didn't call themselves an athlete. And I always, you know, if you are participating in exercise, you know, I think that you have earned the athlete title. Like if you are moving your body, you're being athletic. You know, if you're going for a walk, you're being athletic. And what you're saying, Jenny, is that like so many people don't allow themselves to fall under that category. And it's like, as humans, we need to be athletic to actually have longevity. You know, it is important to our health to get out and move. And, you know, if you're doing that movement, you are an athlete. And, you know, I think so many people struggle with that term, but anybody who's on the Pelotons, you know, they're being athletic.
Yeah, if you're doing it on purpose, then you're an athlete. Like,
yeah, I think with all of like the athletics and sports and stuff, like obviously it's important for long term health. But as ultra cyclists and for you, an ultra runner, I often wonder. And when I first got into ultra riding, my ex, he was very worried about me doing these long distance things, and only was like, I think maybe you should just do like one of them a year. You know, I don't know if this is necessarily good for your body. And I was like, let me just tell you, I know we've been married for a really long time, but do you know who I am? Of course, I'm going to do more than one a year. Yeah. But I wonder, especially as a runner, I listen to all of the podcasts with Courtney, and like I love to learn about ultra runners because it's such a different kind of thing than what we do. But it's also still the same. At the end of the day, we're doing this like thing in our brains. But like as an ultra cyclist and an ultra endurance runner, for you, what do you feel as if like is the like longevity in the sport for you? Like what are the keys to that long term for you? Is it doing this like, yeah, what is it for you?
You know, I did a journaling exercise a few weeks ago that was I think I never thought about it before, how long I want to be a runner for. And then I, you know, it didn't take me 2 seconds to know that I'll want to be a runner for my whole life. And that is my plan. So then I just kind of like did an exercise around like, why is that? And what do I love about it? And what's it going to take? And that was a really important thing for me to have that conversation with myself and say, I do plan on being a runner for my whole life. And hopefully that's a really long time to go still. And hopefully I don't do anything like, you know, that, you know, I'm sure we'll get into the eating disorder thing, but like that nearly cost me running. Obviously, I had to like go claw it back after that. So I need to make sure I don't do anything stupid like that again. And yeah, so I did do that exercise on how long I want to be a runner for. I want to be a runner for my whole life. So then what's important to me about like, how do I approach this? Like my mental attitude towards it has to be one of sustainability. And, you know, any endurance athlete, that's an easy exercise to do. Like we know that we're not here to sprint and leave it all on the field. We know that we always have to keep something in our back pocket because that's a nature of ultras. You know, stupid, boring things like going to the gym. Don't love the gym, but I do have to go. And yeah, not getting an eating disorder again and keeping my mental health towards running a really good place so that I don't start to get really silly, egotistical ideas about, you know, running myself into the ground again. Yeah, so I think that's really the thing. It's just like kind of knowing what's ahead, knowing that 10 years from now I want to be running, 20 years from now I want to be running. Okay, if you put it in those terms, then how do you approach your body today if you have to think about it that way?
It's certainly the decisions you make today suddenly have a lot more weight than if you were just, you know, I'm going for a jog today and see how I feel tomorrow, but rather if you have that foresight to think about where you're headed, it makes everything else feel so small in comparison. You're like,
yeah, and then
okay.
The pressure is really off when you have a really bad month. You know, we all go through these cycles where it just doesn't seem to be clicking or working and you can't figure it out, then you sit like that can just feel like the end of the world sometimes today when I'm just like really the legs just aren't doing what they're meant to be doing. And then yeah, when you think like, well, 20 years from now I'm still gonna be doing the same sport, then you're like, well, I'm gonna forget about this. Yeah, this will eventually pay in the background.
I think that's a nice segue into, I mean, so you recently launched your Substack, the Ultra Trail, and I love the bio about your ultra long trail to health and ultra sports, and you've shared so vulnerably there, and
the one thing that I really appreciated in choosing Substack was that people could choose to opt into that conversation instead of it just being something dumped on their Instagram feed, because it can be very triggering for people. You may not, or you know, you want to choose when you reflect on it.
Yeah, Instagram is just trigger roulette. You just came here to look at dogs, and then suddenly, you know, someone's posted about a traumatic event that's recently happened in their life, and you're like, well, what? I'm fine, but I wasn't ready, didn't know that was coming. So yeah, you always kind of be a bit delicate. Yeah, so I did want it to be on a different platform, and then you can subscribe and you can unsubscribe, because like my journey with recovery has not been linear. It's been sometimes I'm amazing with it, and then sometimes I just can't handle it. And so I was trying to think about, you know, what would I have needed, you know, what was the resource that I wish I had. And I think being able to opt out when you need to, and then like, I'll take the hit, I'll see that little unsubscribe and go, oh boo, another person left. But like, I'd rather you did it that way and went and looked at puppies on the internet again, and then came back when you're ready to hear it again.
Yeah, I think that's so important. So you've shared like quite openly about disordered eating, exercise dependency. I think before we even met, I commented on one of them because I just resonate so heavily with so many of the things that you've shared. But the process of getting help for those things is really sticky. And I'm curious, like, was there a moment that you realized, oh shit, I'm not in a good way? Was it someone in your life? Or like, what was the process of getting help and like getting on a path to recovery like?
I ran my body completely into the ground. I was actually in Colombia on one of the best bikepacking trips of my life. Like, I did this gravel ride across the Andes, and it was so amazing. And I felt really good until I didn't. And this is, anyone who's been in low energy availability, they'll know that this is what the life is like with chronic LEA, is that you can feel really good, and then suddenly your body can just say, like, fuck you. And you don't move again for a little while. And you're just kind of like always bonking. That's what low energy availability and red ass is. Just always bonking. That's how you know you're in that territory. And I think that bonk was just the hardest one. But I couldn't walk. Like, I was so exhausted. I couldn't walk. I couldn't stay awake. I was so run into the ground. And then it's not like this was stuff that I didn't know. It's not like I thought it was normal that I didn't have a menstrual cycle. Like, I did know that was wrong. I just refused to look at it because I wasn't skinny yet. And that was the thing for me. I was like, I obviously don't have a problem, because only really, really skinny people, those ribs are poking out, because that's all you see. That's what we know of, you know, eating disorders. So I was like, I obviously don't really have a problem. And if I went to a doctor, they would not grant me that I have a problem, because like, I don't look like it. So that was kind of when I finally said, all right, like, it's time to just admit the truth. And at the time, I was in BC, and BC healthcare through the pandemic had moved to phone appointments with doctors. And that was really key for everything, was that I spoke to a doctor who didn't get to see me. And I still to this day maintain that that was why I was able to get help, because if I had walked into a clinic, then the way I present, they would have been like, you're fine. And then also if I talked about how much I cycle, they'd be like, well, that's why you're tired. Like, you know, they wouldn't take it seriously. They would think I do a silly hobby too much. So it was over the phone where I just kind of led a doctor down the path of like, look, this is what I'm doing deliberately. What should I do next? And I really thought that she would just be like, okay, we'll just get you some blood work and tell you what supplement you need, and you'll be fine in a couple weeks. That was actually all I wanted out of the phone call. Like, but it wasn't that. She was like, no, you have an eating disorder. It was a really big blow to confidence that, you know, I was in my 30s being told that I don't eat right. Like, one of the most basic human things that I have to do every day. And I was told that I've pretty much never done it right. And now I've spent a lot of time working on that and seeing that, oh my gosh, I pretty much never did it right since I was, like, since puberty. And it's a real blow to the confidence. But I worked through it all. That's why it's all on the internet now, is because I am ready. And that's something I'm really clear about with people, is like, I wouldn't be publishing this if I wasn't ready. Like, there was 2 years where I kept that all super quiet, because I knew that, I mean, the thing with publishing, like, Mel, we've talked about this, like, anything you say, the boys will just let you know like what they actually think or what you actually did wrong. You know, you'll get little comments. Yeah. And if you're not really stable, that's going to be really hard to take on. So, yeah, so there was a couple of years where I just silently ticked away at that in the background. And then when I felt like I was I feel like I'm in a place that someone couldn't shake me off of it now. So now I'm ready to, and I'm just kind of writing all these things for 16-year-old me, like things that I wish I'd known.
I love that perspective.
Yeah, she needed better publications back then.
Yeah, and I think the media is getting there, like, slowly but surely. But I mean, like, people...
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, like, people like yourself sharing, like, actual, like, real-life stories, because everyone's experience is different. It is, like, the same kind of diagnosis, for sure, but it's a very personal experience. And, like, that process of unlearning, because it's not like you're actually learning anything new. You already know that all of this stuff is bad. It's just, like, unlearning really, really challenging things. Like, I wish I didn't know how to read...
I know.
A calorie label.
Yeah.
That's something I'm like, I wish I could go back in time and not know the caloric contents other than for like my ultra self. I'm like, give me all the calories. That's the only reason I like to know those things. But
yeah, exactly.
And like, you know, fear foods and things like that. Like, I wish that you could just erase all that, but it still lives with you. And it's just an ongoing process of being like, okay, this is fine. And I've unlearned that habit and that pattern of behavior.
But you also have to be, it feels like leaving society, because the things that you now have, like, you know, seen the other side, and you're like, guys, this is stupid. Like, we actually should eat bananas. Like, we're just like actually kind of okay for you. Like, you have to kind of just depart society, because there is no chance that there are, like, that you're without women in your life who still believe those things. You know, they're your mothers and your aunts and all these women around you who you can't cancel, sadly.
Nope.
You still have to, like, see them every now and then, have a meal with them. And you just have to be like, I'm not listening. And just be the weird one who eats an entire plate in front of them and just take that on.
The banana comment, was that an actual ad that you shared in your Substack that said it was like a banana is a Mars bar in yellow skin?
Yeah, it was the Telegraph ran that as a piece in their online. Like, they published it online, an entire article about how bananas are really unhealthy.
That's
because they have sugar in them.
Sweet. Also, Mars bars are delicious. You should just
pair them.
Yeah. we're cyclists, so I'm sorry. What was your diss about the Mars bar? Like, it's pretty vital food for us.
Yeah. Carbs, sugar, yes, help please. Us survive.
Yeah.
Confused about the whole, like, merit of this article.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
When you were racing... Actually, well, I guess you were bikepacking when you realized this, but were you racing during the time where it was really bad as well? And what did that look? I mean, for you, that experience while racing, I mean, I know what it's like when I haven't taken in enough fuel. I mean, I basically just cry. I mean, we all cry. Like, I feel like we need to be completely honest about that. Like, Mel talks about it. I talk about it. You spoke about it earlier. Like, we cry.
Yeah, I love crying.
Yeah.
And it's really helpful.
Oh, yeah.
But if I'm crying, it's usually because I'm really, 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 really
hungry.
Low on calories. And I'm bonking, basically.
Yeah.
Like, how did you experience that while racing? And when did you, I mean, the Columbia experience obviously is kind of like when you realized, but you started to, from what we can tell, is that you did some less racing. You kind of stepped back from racing. Like, was that after the Columbia experience or while you were kind of dealing with it early on?
Yeah, I think during races, I could really put a very solid head on and do what I need to do to keep myself moving. And I wasn't toxic during the event, but I remember really clearly the last Silk Road that I won. I remember coming in, and you know what it's like, especially on those races where you're in the wilderness a lot, and you come in, and especially like Cynthia, you would have just been through this, when you're the first woman, suddenly the media, like, you pretty much know the day that the first man has crossed the finish line because the media car is on you 5 minutes later. And so then, like, suddenly all the toxic thoughts come rushing back. You've just been in the wilderness for so long, feeling so strong, taking care of yourself. And then suddenly there's cameras on your body. And then everything changes. And I remember it really well. Like, now I can look back and say that I was quite sick at the time. But it's hard to say that you're sick when you've just won the Silk Road. But I do remember really well coming down that final stretch, eating everything that was left on the bike, because I knew that I wouldn't be allowed to eat it as soon as the race was over. And I knew that, like, when the race was over, because, like, you know, the finish line at Silk Road, like, everyone's clavicles look good. Like, everyone has thrown up everything that they've ingested over the last 2 weeks. Like, it's
everyone
skinny
is the
place.
Slimmest version of their...
Yeah, it's the best weight loss diet in the world. Too bad it's, like, isn't sustainable. But, you know, I, like, I had a lot of toxic thoughts coming into the finish line about how I was going to make the most of that. And so that's how I know that I was really sick back then. But I could do it for the race. You know, I could pull it together for the race, but just literally in the last 2 hours of the race started switching back to diet culture and body image. And so that was the last race I did before everything collapsed. It was, at least I left on a high.
You took a hiatus. Like, you left on a high and took a hiatus from racing. Like, was it a planned thing? Did you just decide? Or did you think, okay, a little bit more time and then I'll get better? And a little bit more time and then I'll get better?
No.
Like, what was that?
I thought I would get better really quickly because you think all you have to do is just eat and then your period will come back and then off you go. Like, it just seems so simple. But it wasn't. And I just couldn't believe that it wasn't simple. Like, all you have to do is eat. That's literally all they told you to do is just eat more. And then it turns out that's really hard. Like, mentally, it's so hard. But then obviously, I didn't know that physiologically it would be really hard. My body was so used to not getting that much food that I was in physical pain all the time because I was trying to eat full meals and my stomach was just like I was,
Your digestion has its own learning curve to actually, like, understand how to process that, like, and I mean, that's where the pain, and I mean, my own experience is, like, I was bloated for, like, 3 years of my life because I was finally eating enough and my body's like,
and then, like, because your brain is like, don't do this, you'll get fat, and then you immediately get bloated and you're like, see, I told you. So it makes it twice as hard because you just feel icky. Like, I did go out, I think I said it on this website, I did go out and I bought some extra large, like, black cute clothes that I would feel really nice in, kind of thing. That was like, okay, let's just, like, wear something cute and feel comfortable. Let's not try to put on our skinny jeans right now because that's just going to be a crisis. Like, don't put yourself in that position. But so physiologically, it was really hard. And then mentally, like I said, it wasn't linear. It wasn't so easy that I just said to myself, I'll just start eating, because, you know, you start and you get a little bit down the path and then, you know, the way our brains work when we're uncomfortable, we go back to safety, and safety was diet culture. It's all I knew since I was 14 years old, that this new landscape of being one of the only women I knew who was trying to eat an entire banana in one sitting. Like, yeah, it was
an really, entire banana.
An entire banana. That's not cutting them in half. That thing remains, like, for me, like, just know the whole thing.
But I remember a time in my life where it was like half a banana is like, that's your maximum. Meal. That is truly your maximum amount of carbohydrates and sugar you can possibly consume.
And someone will say something anyway. Lots of sugar and fruit. Yeah, we've been through so much. If we're women of our age, we've already been through so much bullshit.
I feel really, really, really sad for women that are younger than us that have to deal with even more of that culture, like the Instagram.
They have to deal with filters on top
look
of it.
And filters.
They don't even know what women look like anymore.
You know, cute, all of it.
Do you remember when Facetune came out, when people started editing their Instagram photos? So you'd have, like, friends going on beach holidays and they would, like, pinch their stomachs in. And, like, I mean, I've definitely done that to photos in the past. I mean, I also don't think I ever felt confident enough to post something where, like, that much skin was out. I mean, I still don't even, like, it takes a lot of guts to post a photo of me in, like, any kind of Lycra because I'm, like, you're on display. But I also know that it is important, like, there's two sides of the coin of that imagery, right? It's important to just, like, show where you're at and who you are and embrace that. But it also is, like, it does give people a point of comparison, which, so it's a double-edged sword, the imagery thing.
Yeah, I find it with the body positive movement, it's very, everything's just very body centric. And I even, like, with the Substack thing, it's cringing, like, I can't not put, you can't post thing on the internet without photos. So I put a lot of pictures of the dog because I'm like, here's a dog. The internet needs a photo attached to this post. Mm-hmm. Here's Lola. Mm-hmm. She doesn't worry about what she eats.
You could put photos of your bike.
Yeah, put photos of the bike.
Or your shoes or something.
Yeah, and occasionally ones of me. I just don't want it to be, I'm never going to dance around in my bra. I don't think I'm going to become someone that can dance around in my bra and say I feel good about my body. I think I could dance around and say I feel good about my body. I mean, that'll be a push, but all we have, the way that we consume content at the moment is very visual. And that can make recovery really hard because now when someone's telling you what to do, you're weighing that up against what they look like. It's such a mindfuck.
And I'm sure, like, in addition to getting yourself healthy, you had that layer of, like, I love that you called it the Jenny Tuff Show. It kind of made me giggle. But it was the Jenny Tuff Show in a way. Like, you were one of those kind of premier women winning the biggest races in the world. And I'm sure, you know, you were in the spotlight, you were getting sponsors, and then to have to go and take care of yourself, like, that is incredibly challenging on its own. But then, like, how did you navigate that pause from racing when I'm sure there were probably people who were paying you based on your racing? Like, how did you navigate that with brand partners?
Yeah, I mean, I lost 2 sponsors. Honestly, I thought it would be more. So, you know, I'm good with that. And I don't blame them, because the industry is in a really huge downturn at the moment. So, you know, anyone that's able to support us. Yeah, I totally respect that. If I wasn't putting out, I shouldn't be getting anything back. I think I was really focused on, like, doing what work I can do. So saying, like, well, I can't race, but that doesn't mean I can't work. Like, you know, I published a book during that time, and it was probably, like, the, like, thinnest of silver linings was that I had a bit more time to spend writing my book, because I wasn't meant to be going out that much. So I did work, and I did make sure that brands were getting, I was trying to make them not notice, because I was really scared to, like, say to a marketing manager that I've got a serious mental health issue, so I'm currently not doing anything, because, like, that's not something that anyone wants to tell their boss, especially when the boss relationship is as a freelancer who's being sponsored to be an athlete, and then you're like, oh yeah, I'm incapable at the moment. You don't want to. So I was just hoping they wouldn't notice. I just thought, oh, if I put out enough work, maybe no one will pick up on the fact that I haven't been on a start line. And to be fair, I was rushing back to the start lines. I was trying really hard. And, you know, I was signing up to so many things.
Admittedly, I saw your name on a lot of races. I'm an internet person. And then but I would never reach out and be like, hey, Jenny, without knowing you and as, like, a friend. But I was like, that would be so challenging to have all of those stop starts when people do have their eyeballs on you, because inevitably someone's going to notice and someone may not have the wherewithal to not actually, like, say something, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of people did.
I figured yeah, where as were much. You? And were you just, did you just, like, let it roll off your back, or you're just kind of like, I'm doing what I need to do, and this is just part of who I am.
Exactly. I just had to put a little bit of faith in the process. And as the year went on and the second year went on, that got harder and harder. Then the loss of identity starts to really creep in, that you're like, this was only meant to take a couple of weeks. You were just meant to, like, eat a really big pasta and then come back. It's not happened yet. And it was really, really stressful. Because I had to completely reboot both my mind and my body. You know, they both needed more work than I thought. I really thought the body would have responded faster. And the brain. It took a long time to come back, and there was that huge loss of identity. And then, yeah, like I said, there's, you know, your name. And then I think I didn't even realize how bad it was until I did come back. And then sponsors I worked with were like, oh my God, you're back. And I was like, I was here. I just wasn't at the front of any races, but I mean, I was here.
I think with ultra riding, it's so much on your body that, you know, obviously having to decide whether or not you tell them that you're having a mental health crisis or not, like, that is in itself a challenge. But, you know, I hope that brands, and it seems like the brands that you work with have respected that, sometimes you just need a little bit of a break. You know, this ultra riding is so heavy on your body, and then dealing with something like what you were dealing with, you know, I'm glad that you've now shared it, because I'm sure that's probably been a little bit of an eye opener for the brands that you work with. And just, you know, we need a break sometimes, whether we have a mental health crisis or not. Sometimes we just need to take a step away. But when you realize it's time to come back to racing, then you come back to racing. And I think we've seen that with other women that do ultras as well, in the running and the riding sphere, and also in the triathlon sphere as well. How did you know it was time for you? Like, obviously you signed up for these races. Mel mentioned she'd seen you on some start lines. I had seen you on some start lines, and then, you know, you didn't attend. When, at what point, what race? This is your first race with Grand Guanche coming back? I'm not sure,
no.
Actually.
No,
race around Rwanda. Yes.
In February. So
February last year. Yeah. How did that go?
I wasn't good. Yeah. I played a really safe game. And that was like conversation with my ego was, okay, don't dot watch. Just don't even look. You don't need to know where you are in the race. You're just here to finish. And that was amazing. And it turns out it's really fun if you ride these events at like a sustainable pace. I don't know if you've ever tried.
Yeah.
yeah. Like having a,
that's what I do.
Who knew? Like you can sleep for 6 hours and feel amazing and then have a really good ride. Yes, I didn't know. I went there and I was so scared because I was like, this is going to be another blow up. And I didn't think my confidence could take another failure. I was really like, it's just been too long. It's been too hard. And so I was really scared on the start and the first few days, even I was just like always whispering to myself, like, just keep your shit together. Like, just please, 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 please don't blow up. Like, please get through this. And then, yeah, the last day when I realized I was going to make it to the finish line, I just couldn't stop crying. I was like,
wow.
Oh, so much crying. I cried on the plane home. Like, if you ever cried on a plane, like, you just sat there by yourself.
Oh, every time I get on a plane, goodness. I cry. I don't know what it is about airplanes. They just fuck me up.
Well, that's your own thing. Oh my god, I couldn't stop crying. It was just, I couldn't believe it. Like, I think, that's yeah, huge. I hadn't realized how huge it was until I let myself say, like, until, you know, you, and I think it's the same with, I think that's why I called the Substack an ultra show, because it just feels so much like an endurance event. They're just so, it's so intimidatingly long and you don't know when it will fucking end. Like, just, you know, constantly working, constantly hoping, knowing that at any time you might blow up. Yeah, so it was, yep, that really emotional feeling of not knowing I was ever going to get to the other side and then actually getting there and actually finally having a like JC finisher time to my name for the first time in 2.5 years. But, yeah. Thank
Amazing.
You.
Amazing. Amazing. That probably felt like.
Lots of crying. Oh. That's what it felt like. Just couldn't stop crying.
I'm tearing up because I mean. That's huge and congratulations. I mean, I'm sure it's still like a continuum of recovery. You know, it's not just like the box is checked and you're suddenly better. It's something that, you know, you carry it with you. But I'm sure that was such a boost to your confidence to be like, wait, I can do both of these things. And the other thing that you said on your Instagram was like, you're not back. This is a new Jenny. This is not the same Jenny coming back. This is a new Jenny re-entering and doing things differently.
Yeah, exactly. And I accept that that means I'll maybe never win another race again. Like maybe the toxic, sick person that was able to win this little road, like maybe I'll never be her. Maybe I'll stay the person that raced around Rwanda, just going like, I'm just here for a good time and I'm going to sleep 6 hours a night. Maybe I'll stay like that. Or maybe I'll get my mojo for racing back and I'll be at the pointy end again. But I don't know that for sure. I think, yeah, it's all about that soul searching of, like, what do you really love about ultras? Why do you really want to be here? If I want to be doing this 20 years from now, if I want to be a lifelong endurance athlete, then what's the most important thing to me? And like, I don't know. It'll ebb and flow. I'm sure I'll probably race again. But for the moment, I'm a participant racer and I really love it.
And that's still an amazing thing.
Hard, you guys. Like, so that's hard. The funny thing about our industry. Like, we just always applaud the white men that win the race. But like anyone that can even get to the start line of these things, like, come on, like this is hard.
100%.
Like, it's so hard.
So hard.
100%. That's why I always say like the finish line is a bonus. And if you hinge like your experience or what you get out of it on making it to the end, you won't have the same thing. Whereas if it's like, if you enjoy the process to get to the start, you embrace kind of that starting energy. You know, you ride your heart with your heart and as much as your body and your mind will allow. And if you get to the finish, amazing. But you're not any less than if you don't make it there. That doesn't change what you've accomplished.
Yeah, it's not a pass-fail exam.
100%. You nailed it. It's not pass-fail, whether your name ends up on the GC or not. But, you know, people talking about it is what's going to keep moving the needle forward. So I'm just glad you're in a place where you're able to share and that people can benefit, because I bet so many people are reading your Substacks and your Instagram. And like that movie with Emily Chappelle was also fantastic.
Yeah, it was funny. We had a big confidence crisis about that, about whether we were allowed to hold space here. Because it's this funny thing about being an athlete. Like, you know, again, I said the doctor, I had to get a diagnosis over the phone, because if I walked in, I would look like a healthy person who just cycles too much, and any doctor would tell me to cycle less. But so, yeah, I think we really struggled that we were like, can we hold space here? Because we're straight sized women who are able to win these races. It doesn't sound like a problem. But then, you know, once we put it out and the stuff that I've been putting out, I just have an inbox full of people of every different, you know, gender, age, size, coming back saying how relatable it is. And you just realize how many of us are living under these patriarchal standards that don't make sense for any of us. And we're all living with it. We're all dealing with it. And the more that we talk about it, the more of us can like pop our heads out and go like, hang on, let's not do that anymore. Let's eat our whole bananas for breakfast. And like,
I would say not do that anymore. Robbed the words out of my mouth, but yeah, I don't know, like, thank you for sharing. I think, you know, the internet is a vortex and a deep hole sometimes where we just see pretty pictures and you know, it's, you know, sometimes you kind of get lost from reality in that vortex, and it's important to, you know, share. I mean, there are people out there who are not going to share what's going on in their life. But I do appreciate you so much for sharing, because I think it's not something that is easy, you know, especially when you're in the public sphere and people are going to say what they're going to say. But people are going to flood your inbox and say thank you. So, you know, I say thank you for sharing. And, you know what? One thing
I mean, so much to me coming from you.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. Well, you know, we appreciate you so much for being on here.
I appreciate
it. We had I was like, I messaged Cynthia and I was like, I messaged Jenny to be on the podcast. And she
got very
yes.
excited.
And Cynthia was like so pumped. And I had like a little fangirl moment. And it's really cool to actually get to chat with you. And like, you know, there's so much about you on the internet, but to actually like, I feel mm-hmm. like have a conversation about a little bit more
who you are,
like, who you are, not like who's Jenny Tuff, the Jenny Tuff show, but like who is Jenny?
Actual Jenny?
You know. Also, the other funny thing when we were like mapping out the questions, I kept saying, oh, "This is so tough.
You got it. You have to do it. Like you're a bad journalist if you don't pick up on it."
But I didn't.
You know?
I didn't say it intentionally.
I know, but just getting your
like,
range.
She said
so
it twice,
not to
maybe
say
three
tough.
Times.
And then I just like, I kept saying tough.
Imagine that being your
thing
whole
on the internet
life,
that people
don't use that word, someone's going to laugh. Imagine just carrying that around with you everywhere you go.
I love that it says real name. It's on your website and maybe your Instagram too, but like real name.
People ask all the time. And like only a few people ask, and they'll put their hands up really quiet. They'll be like, what's your real name? And then I'll realize that people think I'm the type of asshole that would make my Instagram handle. Jenny
Something.
Tuff, because I'm so like so proud of myself. I'm like, no, I'm not proud of myself. I wouldn't. I
nope.
really wish
no,
my
no,
name was
no,
Robinson
no,
or something
no.
like that. Like I swear, it's not. It's just a funny fate that that's my name. It's pronounced Tooth in Scotland, if that helps.
Tooth,
Jenny Tooth.
Yeah,
Tooth.
Yeah, I love it. Shall we wrap it up with some fun this or that? You can give us some hot takes and then we'll allow you to enjoy your... What do you do on a Friday afternoon in the Highlands or evening?
Normally I would go out, but I might get on the train. I might just bail on those gale winds outside.
Course,
and
get on the train. I wouldn't go outside in that wind either.
Well,
you can watch some trash TV or listen to some trash music.
I'm rerunning Friends
trash TV
on
the
trainer. I'm on season 2 right now, and
heck
it's just blowing my little mind. I'm like, I was very young the first time I watched this show.
So good, though.
So much stuff I'm picking up on now that it's the first time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Would you choose Atlas or Silk Road?
Silk Road.
Why?
Bigger mountains.
Running or riding an ultra?
You, how dare you?
I have a follow-up question to this, too.
Okay, for an ultra, I'll say ride.
Okay, and Silk Road, riding, or what was the name of the ultra you did that was across?
So she just ran across it.
Oh, you just ran. You just
did
ran. Okay,
myself.
So riding or running across Kyrgyzstan?
Running. If you're mechanicals.
Oh, true. I mean, you're already carrying your bike and walking on your feet a lot of it anyway. So I guess just minus the bike and all the junk. I guess you still have a lot of junk, though.
Yeah. I feel like you might have told us this already, but your favorite type of bike to ride?
Gravel.
Yeah, you underbiker. Yeah, underbiker.
Underbiker. Who needs your hands to work fully?
Never.
Hey, Cynthia?
Never. You don't need. Never. I'm still not there yet. I don't have working hands. Even
you're deaf.
Whatever. It's fine. Favorite food to eat while riding?
Haribo.
Oh, wrong answer.
Wrong answer. We're Haribo
There's
haters.
Not a, no.
Yep.
I'll fight F on this. What?
Yeah, because they just are, they're just so difficult to chew compared
they
to
give
North
me, like,
American
lock jaw.
Gummies. Like, there's way less chemicals in them. Like, I
Maybe
don't.
You're not experimenting with the full range.
Okay. You can actually. I'm going to walk my statement back, which I don't
We're gonna get so
like
much
to
shit
do very
for
often.
We're going to get canceled. I just never
European
even reach for them
anymore. You guys. Oh, my God.
The Haribo frogs.
Oh, the frogs are great, yeah.
The Haribo frogs are good. I like the frogs. And they're peach flavored, apparently.
If it looks green, my brain thinks it's green.
That's what
green
the back
flavor.
Of the package says.
I can't eat that.
No. Okay, you. What's your favorite Haribo?
They do these Crocs that are like sour. You can't always get them. You can always get them in Germany, but they're pretty hard internationally, but I like them. Germany, like go to Germany and then you get the whole range.
Are you going to go through Germany, Cynthia? No,
I'm actually going to go and stay in Germany actually before I do Transcon for like 2 or 3 weeks.
You're doing the TCR?
I'm doing the TCR.
Well, there's no point recovering your hands because you're going to lose them again soon anyway. around not being able to use these fingers.
Those fingers? Well, I'm going to get a bike where you don't have to use hands. Just like no handlebar at all. Just
get
all
a recumbent.
Core. A recumbent. Yes. Can you imagine?
You look like, on no hands, like so brilliant that you just do the whole race like.
Like this. Can you imagine the core strength you needed? I need to be like Alan with the cargo bike and use a recumbent instead. Just like, I will try when I go to Germany, all of the Haribo. I will do a taste test, maybe make a video for you about it and send it your way.
It's important to me that this works.
Yeah, you should make it.
Okay,
you should make
it. I'll test them out. I promise. I will give them a
like,
shot.
We don't face down when you go into a gas station, and I'll direct
and ask you.
Around.
Just tell me which one. It like it's like in Morocco when I'm like trying to just direct. you're like no, down, over, green. Wait, peach? What?
Yeah, like the little like claw machine. Like no,
That's what my hands look like after I finish racing. Yeah, is that like claw? It literally can't. It can't pick anything up. Like you go to like pick up the fork, and you literally can't pick your fork up. It's the same thing.
Do you ever think like swimming it would be the best recovery? Like, oh, look, go get some cold water, and then you go swimming, and your hands are
they don't even actually work. You're like,
oh,
I'm just literally not even.
Now. I'm
just
my hands don't work.
Treading water, basically.
Oh,
okay,
God.
We got two more this or that. Music or no music?
Music.
Okay. Podcasts or music?
Ooh, both. Got to go between them.
Oh, yeah. Switch it up. Mm-hmm.
What podcasts are you listening to these days?
Detours?
I like a lot of really, five stars. We're going to take a moment now to please rate the show.
Thank you.
You can come back. You can come back.
I listen to a lot of like really random, like pretty much as far away from the thing that I'm doing.
Mm.
So I listen to like an economics podcast or have you ever, I don't know if you get BBC Sounds over there, but there's a show by Indy Raxon about witches. Ooh. And it was so good. And I learned so much about like basically the whole history of women via witchcraft how many of them they burned. I like a really random show that's completely off track of what I'm doing right now. Try to learn something and then it instantly like it just goes and dumps out your brain because you've just cycled for 22 hours and you're like, I don't know. I listened to a podcast about the microeconomics in the Coke industry and you just don't, I don't know anything about it now.
It's funny though, because sometimes you'll have like associations where like you'll remember one fact and you'll remember exactly where you heard it, where you were looking.
Yeah.
Like if somebody brings that up, you're like, huh, I was in the Andes on that descent. And it was really wet out. Like, just random things
then
like that.
Like,
your brain is...
Cynthia, come back.
I remember where I was singing music, like where I was screaming at the top of my lungs.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Do you sing out loud because of the bears or will you do it in any country?
When I'm vibing, I am just screaming.
Are you really?
Going, Oh yeah,
I dance. I like
singing along to something, or just on your own acoustic version.
Oh, headphones for sure, for sure, for sure, for sure, for sure. I want to know, like, when you say 90s pop, what are, like, what artists or albums are you referring to?
So I was the Spice Girls was my first band.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
You're definitely invited.
Nelson
into the
calls
club.
Me Mel B because of the Spice Girls.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Love that.
That's funny.
Yeah. They were my first. Yeah. A lot of the girl pop, Britney Spears, Beyonce through her entire, like, the now until all the way back to then, like, any Beyonce will work.
Dude, the new Beyonce song.
Oh, geez.
I feel like I should get my cowboy boots on and start dancing right now. This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold up.
She never stops being good.
She never stops.
Never stops. Oh, my gosh. Okay, last question.
All right, the last one, and I'm going to mod it slightly. Your dream place to either bike pack or go for a run, or both.
Are you going to say the Canaries?
Yeah, I should make it my dream place. Get my focus.
Fulfill your dream.
Really boring answer, but the Alps. The Alps are very dreamy because logistically they're just like, I always explain this to people from North America that haven't traveled Europe yet. I'm like, there's just so much trail. Like, you know, we have obviously the Rockies are the best mountains. Everybody knows that they're the most beautiful ones, but a lot of it's really accessible.
Thank you very much. Extremely inaccessible.
Yeah, so like, you get to look at them and look and appreciate trail. Them. But then the Alps, there's just trails everywhere. It's just nonstop that, you know, you can turn off your brain and just run for days without, you know, it's just, yeah, it's really dreamy.
I'm sold.
Really dreamy place.
I'm sold.
I want to do the Alps Divide sometime. We had Katie actually on the podcast. We haven't released it yet, but she, you know, chatted about her race and everything. And I'm like, I need to do that next year. I think I will set it as a potential September situation.
I think I'm going. I think
this year.
Oh my God, yes. Okay, we'll interview you after.
She emailed me yesterday and said she could get.
Oh, Jenny, I think you should go. Also, you must have. Totally. Did you meet Katie? Did you meet her in Kyrgyzstan? Because
yeah, we were. She was the. There were three women that crossed the finish line that year. She was one.
She's
of them.
The most. Cool. She's just so epic.
She still looked really pretty at the finish line.
Oh, she always
she's
looks so glamorous,
and she has her pearls on, and
finishing the Silk Road.
She's glamorous, but she's also like kicking ass and taking names.
She's
like,
so badass about it.
It's because, like, especially like pretty girls do get very much doubted when they show up to a hard
totally. Race but like she's that. Out here like
but she made it
literally.
Like, why are you still pretty right now?
She could also like suture up. I'm sure she could probably like suture up someone's like cut open leg.
She could
or something.
Do anything.
Yeah. She's so skilled.
Oh, yeah, she's gonna survive the apocalypse. Like she's
definitely.
Yeah, I saw that race and I was like, oh yeah, another race in the Alps. That looks nice. And then I saw she was the race director and I was like, in.
Yeah.
You should
more
go. You should.
Women race directors out there.
You should go. Well, this has been amazing. We're not
so
gonna
much fun.
We're not gonna keep you for. An exorbitant amount of time.
2.5 hours or anything, you know.
Not naming names, are we?
No. That was so
It's
vicious.
So wonderful to talk to you, though. Very nice to connect. Okay. And hopefully we'll see each other in person someday.
Yeah, I do show up to the races nowadays, so we will actually
we'll see you soon. Or maybe, I don't know, I'll be in Europe this summer, so we could connect. Oh, that would be super fun.
Yeah. We will.
If not, I'll at least FaceTime you when I'm picking out my Haribo gummies.
Yeah, I'm converting you. This become important to me.
We're really going to get canceled from this Haribo fight.
We are going to get canceled for the Haribo Haribo fight. But anyways, it's been
wonderful.
Amazing.
Thanks,
thank you
Jenny.
So much.
Jenny Tooth.